The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Guys, Valentine's Day is next week. Luckily, Pro Flowers is offering an unbelievable deal. 1 dozen red roses plus a free glass vase and chocolates for $29.99 plus shipping and handling. Order now from Pro Flowers. You pick the delivery date and it's guaranteed. But hurry, this incredible deal expires this weekend. The only way to get this amazing deal is to visit proflowers.com. Click on the blue microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code 8989. That's proflowers.com. Secret code 8989.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. The U.S. imposes new sanctions on Iran, and a Navy destroyer reinforces the message. President Trump has some advice for Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell if Democrats don't get on board with his Supreme Court nominee.
Say, if you can, Mitch, go nuclear.
But Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer says he's not a big fan of nominee Neil Gorsuch.
Judge Gorsuch lacks a record of demonstrating the kind of independence the court desperately needs.
Smoother sailing for some other nominees. The president's ban, his word, but he says you can use whatever word you want, on refugees is still in effect. And still coming in for sharp criticism. It's been a busy week, with many more to come, I bet. I'm Sam Litzinger at CBS News in Washington. Let's start with the person who's become one of the hardest working reporters in the nation's capital, of necessity, given all the news coming out of the White House these days. I'm not sure if CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy has slept much since the inauguration. Stephen, President Trump has decided to impose sanctions on Iran because of its missile test. He indicated something like this was coming.
He did, Sam. Friday morning before dawn, he tweeted that Iran is playing with fire and that he won't be kind to Tehran the way he says his predecessor Barack Obama was. These sanctions announced by the Trump administration midday Friday target what they describe as a procurement network based in Iran and China that has helped Iran develop its ballistic missile program. Last weekend, Iran launched a missile capable of carrying a nuclear warhead. The U.S. lifted sanctions on Iran as part of the nuclear deal. And the big question in Iran now is whether these new sanctions will be seen as a violation of that deal that could then trigger some kind of response from Iran, perhaps even a restarting of their nuclear program.
And there's where the United States has placed a Navy destroyer off the coast of Yemen to protect waterways from Houthi militias signed to Iranian work. A senior Iranian cleric says the missile program will continue, so obviously the story is far from over. Now, Stephen, the U.S. does have a new Secretary of State. The White House didn't have much trouble getting Rex Tillerson confirmed by the Senate.
In the end, he was confirmed with 56 votes in the Senate. 4 Democrats came on board with the Republicans to confirm the Secretary of State. That is a low watermark so far for Trump cabinet appointments. Others, for example, the Secretary of Defense was confirmed 98-1, Homeland Security by a vote of 88-11, but 56-43 is the low watermark to date for a Trump cabinet appointment. We could see an even closer vote Tuesday when Betsy DeVos is up for Secretary of Education. It could be a very close vote, so close, in fact, that Vice President Pence may have to go up to the Capitol to break the tie.
Now, what's the White House doing to make sure Neil Gorsuch becomes the next Supreme Court justice?
They are arguing that there is absolutely nothing wrong with this appointment, that there'd be no reason for any Democrat in the Senate to oppose him, pointing out that no Democrat did oppose Gorsuch when he was up for the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals based in Colorado 10 years ago. But Democrats are still miffed about the idea that this seat was stolen from them and from Barack Obama when he nominated Merrick Garland a year ago. It's going to be a tough fight, but for now, Republicans are saying that he's got a sterling record. His intellect and his writings are sublime, they say. And right now they're making courtesy calls up on Capitol Hill, hoping to persuade just enough Democrats to come on board to avoid doing what the president advised this past week, and that is going nuclear.
Stephen Portnoy, President Trump is drawing some criticism for phone calls with the leaders of Australia and Mexico.
The president said that when you hear about tough calls, don't worry about it, folks. An indication he wants to portray that everything's under control. But the tough call with Australia was reported by the Washington Post this past week to be the most difficult call yet with a foreign leader. And Australia is, of course, one of our closest allies. This is over some more than 1,000 refugees that Australia refuses to admit that Barack Obama promised the U.S. would take. And, of course, Then you had President Trump imposing his 120-day ban on the admission of any refugees and the particular travel ban from the seven Muslim-majority countries. The White House's position on this is that Mr. Trump is very disappointed about the circumstance that he's been presented with, but he will honor Barack Obama's commitment to bring these refugees in, subject to what the White House continues to call extreme vetting.
And finally, Stephen Portnoy, can you say a few words about daily life at the White House for the press corps? The news really is pouring out.
I'll tell you, it is a round-the-clock, almost endless stream of information that is difficult to keep ahead of. We seem to be falling into or watching a pattern play out where Mr. Trump wakes up before dawn and issues a series of tweets, I suppose written in his own hand, each morning before the sun rises, and that sort of begins to set the tone for the way that news is going to play out through the day. The president has been having mid-morning press availabilities and photo ops. Often they are meetings in the Roosevelt Room or the Oval Office with people he's brought in to discuss jobs and defense and national security issues. And he will speak at that point and introduce the people that he's meeting with. And then a very contentious midday briefing, followed by news that continues to break through the afternoon and into the evening. It's almost too difficult to keep up with what's going on here in this White House. The Trump administration says that that is emblematic of the things that they want to get done. But I'll be perfectly honest with you, Sam. They are not offering us a great deal of time to ask them questions. The briefing on Thursday lasted only 24 minutes, and the first third of it, the first 8 minutes, was spokesman Sean Spicer reading a prepared statement. We only had 17 minutes to actually ask questions about so many things that the American people need to know about. That's not enough time.
CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy, thank you.
You bet.
CBS News correspondent Nancy Cordes says all this hardcore politicking has some nerves on edge on Capitol Hill.
Democrats are responding to a riled-up base that's urging them to resist. But the constant clash over cabinet picks is taking a toll on the typically collegial Senate.
I'd like to take this opportunity to set the record straight.
I object again. The senator apparently can't get the message from the chairman that this is over the top and inappropriate.
I think the senator from Texas doesn't get the message from the chairman.
Could you please leave personalities out of it?
That argument went on for a while, and in case you're wondering, because it was hard to make out, it was over the civil rights record of Senator Jeff Sessions in his confirmation hearing to be attorney general.
It's gotten to the point where some Senate Democrats aren't even showing up for votes on some of the nominees.
Democrats boycotted committee votes for several cabinet nominees.
We are going to exercise whatever power we have through the Constitution.
Their defiance drew anger from Republicans.
This is simply a senatorial temper tantrum.
Who decided to bypass the rules and vote without them.
Mr. Grassley.
Aye.
Mr. Grassley.
Aye.
Mr. Crapo.
Democrats did show up for a vote on Attorney General nominee Jeff Sessions, only to line up against their Senate colleague.
Mr. Coons.
No.
Mr. Blumenthal.
No.
CBS's Nancy Cordes. Heated criticism of President Trump's travel ban on refugees, that and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. President Trump's ban on refugees is now in full effect. He says the overriding goal is to make America safer. But will it? Michael Morell is a former acting director of the CIA who backed Hillary Clinton during the presidential campaign. He doesn't think so. On CBS this morning, he said the ban will hurt America more than it helps.
It is going to make us less safe. First of all, the biggest problem we face is homegrown terrorism. Of the roughly 100 people who have been indicted by the FBI for ISIS-related crimes over the last 3 years, 85% were American citizens. This doesn't get at that at all. None of the attacks that we've seen since 9/11, including 9/11, would be affected by this order. So it doesn't make the threat any less, while at the same time it's playing right into the ISIS narrative. People around ISIS who amplify its message are talking about it, And they are saying, see, we told you this is a war against Islam. So this is going to be a recruitment boon for ISIS. So the Trump administration keeps on pointing to these to these seven countries and say, these countries were on Obama's list, right? This was actually part of a program to enhance the security of the visa waiver program from European countries, from people traveling from European countries. So they enhanced it. Right, they already enhanced it, and there's no evidence that there's any weaknesses to it. So that's really important context here.
How will this increase, perhaps you say, make us less safe? Do you think from an external threat or from an internal threat?
So I think from both, right? It's going to be a recruitment boon for ISIS, both overseas. It'll attract people to them. And here at home, it's going to enhance their propaganda that they throw at Americans. So in both places.
We talk about Steve Bannon going to the Principals Committee. You know what the Principals Committee is. And the fact that unless they have issues relevant to them, the Joint Chiefs, Chairman of Joint Chiefs, or the Director of National Intelligence will not be there.
Unprecedented, both putting a political advisor on and unprecedented taking off the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the DNI. I have never been to a principals meeting where the views of the DNI and the views of the chairman are not relevant. Every principals meeting starts with a briefing, intelligence briefing by the DNI. And having somebody like Bannon in the room brings politics into a room where there should be no politics.
Yeah.
Mike Flynn should be the person in charge in that room talking to the president. This is now going to create competition for Mike, right, for the president's ear. I think what has to happen here is they have to start making policy like adults, right? They have to say to their interagency, here's what we want to do. Get all of the feedback, get everybody in the room together, have a discussion about the upsides and downsides, and make a decision. That didn't happen in this case.
CBS News correspondent Charlie Daggett talked with an Iraqi military leader who's not happy with the new travel restrictions. They're keeping him from coming to the States.
I'm a four-star general, he said, and I'm banned from entering the U.S.? General Talib al-Kanani commands all Iraqi forces, including the American-trained counterterrorism troops that have been leading the fight against ISIS for 2.5 years. His family was relocated to the U.S. for their safety, and he had plans to see them this week until he was told not to bother.
You're hoping to visit America, where you have a home.
I've been fighting terrorism for 13 years and winning, he told us. Now my kids are asking me if I'm a terrorist. For the past decade, Kanani has been traveling to U.S. Central Command in Tampa for high-level meetings with the U.S. military leadership. This ban needs to be reviewed, the general said. We thought we were partners with our American friends. Now we realize we're just considered terrorists.
So you've heard the name Steve Bannon in connection with the Trump White House. Who is he? CBS News correspondent Chip Reed has been checking him out.
Even before gaining a seat on the NSC, Steve Bannon was one of the most powerful people in the White House. It's a breathtaking rise for someone whose job before joining the Trump campaign was CEO of Breitbart News, an ultra-conservative and highly controversial website. Jonathan Greenblatt is CEO of the Anti-Defamation League.
He positioned the website as, quote, the platform for the alt-right, as a host for misogynist, racist, Islamophobic propaganda.
During the campaign, Mr. Trump appeared with Bannon on Breitbart Radio.
And I do like Breitbart, and Breitbart is legit. I mean, 100% legit.
Breitbart became popular with white nationalists, but the White House denies Bannon is promoting that ideology now. Bannon served in the Navy, attended Harvard Business School, and worked in investment banking, but became a harsh critic of what he described as the Wall Street crisis in 2010.
Now, unlike the manufactured crises of global warming and health care, this is a true crisis.
He has little experience in foreign policy. Ari Fleischer, press secretary to President George W. Bush, says Bush's political director was banned from NSC meetings. Even so, Fleischer supports Trump's promotion of Bannon.
President Bush was much more of a traditionalist, much more cut from the establishment. This is the way it's always been done. Donald Trump is different, and I think he's earned the right to be different.
It was like the 1960s had returned at the University of California, Berkeley. CBS News correspondent John Blackstone says protesters set fires and fought with police, forcing the cancellation of a talk by a now famous right-wing provocateur.
This is the hall on the Berkeley campus where Milo Yiannopoulos was scheduled to be speaking last night, but this turned into a scene of anger and chaos. Police are putting the blame not on students, but on outside agitators. Yiannopoulos is an editor at the right-leaning Breitbart News whose comments have been criticized as racist and misogynistic, and protesters said he had no place on this famously liberal campus.
Protesters broke down barricades, smashed windows, and caused a fire at the UC Berkeley campus. The demonstration led to the cancellation of a planned speech by ultra-conservative writer Milo Yiannopoulos, led away as alarms blared inside, and police ordered demonstrators outside to disperse.
We do need to leave.
It's necessary to take a stand against bigotry, hatred, racism, transphobia, all the different things that are embodied by Milo.
This is not a proud night for this campus, the home of the free speech movement.
I do not believe our students were involved in the vandalism. This was a group of agitators that were masked up.
After the speech was canceled, protesters took their demonstration off campus where the violence and vandalism continue.
Look at this place. Look at it. What caused all this?
It was seriously, the Milo Yiannopoulos protest.
It doesn't matter. We learn by talking. We learn about listening.
Yiannopoulos was wrapping up a college speaking tour.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that an ugly woman is far more likely to be a feminist than a hot one.
Last night's canceled speech was organized by the Berkeley College Republicans. The group issued a statement saying its constitutional right to free speech was silenced by criminals and thugs.
President Trump suggests maybe Berkeley should lose its federal funding. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. I admit it, I'm one of those people who've pretty much given up on flying. Too much hassle, security lines, baggage issues. I try to stay home as often as possible. Thank you very much. There are lots of us frequent non-flyers out there, and I'm not sure this will lure us into an airplane. Some airlines have begun selling cheaper fares, as long as you don't mind basically no extras. You pretty much get a seat, and that's it. Anything else, you pay. CBS News correspondent Chris Van Cleve got onto a plane to check things out.
We know that the vast majority of flyers buy their tickets based almost solely on price, which is why they've been filling Spirit Airlines planes like this one, because of the airline's bargain basement fares, and then they charge you for basically anything you'd consider a frill. United and American are about to do something similar, giving you a super cheap seat, but you only get the space underneath, and if you want to use something like the overhead bin, forget about it.
The basic economy fares will save you money, but come at a cost. You'll be last on board, you can't choose your own seat, and if your carry-on doesn't fit under it, you'll be paying to check it.
We always have extra, you know, bags other than our suitcases, so we really do need the overhead bins.
These restrictive bargain tickets come as ultra-low fare carriers like Spirit are increasingly competing for customers. When we checked round-trip nonstop flights from Chicago to Los Angeles, leaving the first week of March, we found Spirit's bare fare about $22 below that of United and around $100 lower than American's best price. Spirit says on average, their cost is at least 30% cheaper than major airlines, even after paying for a bag, a seat assignment, and a beverage on board.
When it comes down to lower cost of convenience, I'll take convenience.
United and American believe their no-overhead bin basic economy ticket will be more competitive. By 2020, United expects to score an additional billion annually by attracting fare-focused flyers.
They got to wring every nickel out of the consumer with all these new fees.
Senator Chuck Schumer is calling for legislation to keep the overhead free.
They charge you when you store luggage. They shouldn't charge you for the overhead bins, plain and simple.
If customers don't like this product, customers won't use it.
Sean Kennedy represents the airlines and says these binless fares give flyers a new way to save.
Is that going one step too far? An airline is offering a cheaper product for customers that want to fly, that are budget conscious, that want to find the lowest way to get from point A to point B. I'm not sure why there'd be controversy about that.
The airlines are doing is they're segmenting their aircraft. First, business, coach, and no class.
CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
The people who don't mind suffering will go for this rate because they're not brand loyal. The people who do mind suffering will find this so inconvenient that they're going to have to upgrade and pay the price.
Spirit was the first in the U.S. to essentially charge for overhead bin space.
Did it hurt your business?
Not at all. Our customers like being able to put their own model together, pay for the things they want, pay for the things they don't want.
Spokesman Paul Berry.
With Spirit, we allow you to pick and choose your travel experience. On the basic economy, on the legacies, you're being told what that experience is going to be. And I think they're going to find some people who aren't happy with it when they get it.
Exact pricing hasn't been announced, but we know the fares are going to be use or lose, no changes, no cancellations. But the airlines say once you get on the plane, the experience is going to be pretty similar to everybody else in economy, except, of course, no bins, and you're probably going to be in a middle seat.
The murder of 14-year-old Emmett Till was one of the catalysts of the civil rights movement in America. The Chicago teenager was kidnapped and then killed for allegedly whistling at and making advances toward a white woman while visiting relatives in Mississippi. Now historian Timothy Tyson has a new twist in the case. On CBS This Morning, he talked about his book, The Blood of Emmett Till, published by Simon & Schuster, a division of CBS, and the apparent lie by Carolyn Bryant that led to Till's death. She told Tyson about it.
She said, with respect to the physical assault on her or anything menacing or sexual, that part isn't true.
Had she been living this in a horrific way, knowing that she...
Yeah. Well, she's far from the most important victim in the story, of course, but she had not told the truth. It's obviously been a great burden.
Someone was
and a pain.
Brutally.
She thought about Mamie a lot.
Mamie is Emmett's mother.
She lost Emmett's mother. Mm-hmm. She lost a son herself later, and she said always thought about Mamie.
So why did she decide finally to make the call?
Well, I can't read her mind. I'm not sure.
You talked to her.
But I did. Yeah, my sense was that she wanted to unburden herself. She also wanted to tell her story. She was, for posterity.
What did she say about Emmett's death and murder?
She said nothing that boy did could ever justify what happened to him.
That's right.
Yeah, they all agree that there was a whistle, that he did whistle.
Yeah, yeah. But that wouldn't have, justify what was done to him
at
all.
They had a harmless exchange.
That's right.
The two white men who were accused of murdering Emmett in 1955, they admitted it later in a magazine interview.
They did.
They were acquitted by an all-white, all-male jury, so they could not be retried. What did she say about them?
One was her husband.
One was her husband. One was her brother-in-law, who she described as being domineering and brutal, you know, and not a kind man. It was they were not the only people involved in the lynching of Emmett Till. Mm-hmm. There were other family members and a family friend involved. So
she talked about her own being abused, right?
She did not tell me she was physically abused. It was clear she was frightened of her husband. I suspected that was the case. She certainly was verbally harsh with her.
She was 21.
And he was quite angry that she hadn't told him immediately.
Only because his mother, this was what was so interesting to me, his mother wanted to come forward because she wanted him to be seen more than just a victim. She wanted him to be seen as a human being. And she said, how do you talk to a boy who had only been shown love? Because she had a whole big talk with him before he left Chicago to go to Mississippi about what he should do, what he should not do.
Yeah, like hundreds of thousands of African-Americans in Chicago, she had Mississippi roots herself, was born there. So she knew that the racial etiquette was not exactly that in Chicago. Now, if Emmett hadn't known about segregation, if he hadn't known about race hatred, he wouldn't have made it in Chicago. Mm-hmm. He loved to play baseball.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't know where to play baseball and where not to play baseball as a boy in Chicago, you know, you were headed for trouble.
So how did this awful, obscene, brutal death and the open casket change civil rights?
Mm-hmm. Mamie said, I want them to see what they've done to my boy. She turned her private heartbreak and agonies into a public issue, into that fueled a movement that toppled segregation. And this created, really out of Black Chicago's strength, the powerful political machine, largest African-American newspaper in the country, and it changed black labor unions and progressive churches. They launched a movement that became a national movement.
Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News. And I'm Sam Litzinger on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. Maybe you've heard this big football game coming up, something called the Super Bowl. In addition to sports fans, there are some other folks who know all about it. And for them, they have to be careful, because the Super Bowl is a real temptation to slip back into some bad habits. CBS News correspondent Peter King talked with a man who used to be a serious gambler.
After almost 50 years, Arnie Wexler still considers himself a recovering compulsive gambler. From his home in Florida, he tells us that it's no longer a day-to-day struggle.
But for the first 10 to 20 years, it was constantly thinking and dreaming about gambling. It was so insidious, it just never got out of my head.
From the first time you and I became acquainted, and that's probably about, almost 20 years ago or so, you've had a phrase that you've used to describe the Super Bowl and gamblers.
Super Bowl Sunday is like New Year's Day to the alcoholic. Absolutely. And unfortunately, there are some compulsive gamblers in recovery, some of them many years, that can relapse at this time because of all the media hype and everything that's going on with the Super Bowl.
I want to come back to the media in just a second, but one of the things that that I've always heard, I've heard this from you and from other experts, is that, you know, often enough, perhaps gamblers are hoping for one big score to make up for a lost season.
It's very true. What happens when the Super Bowl becomes the last game of the season? The gamblers that are strictly football gamblers, they end up, if they've had a win through the season, then all their money is on this last game. If they're losing through the season, they want to get even, so they're betting a big bundle on this game. That's why this game is such a crucial thing for compulsive gamblers.
And a moment ago, you mentioned the media as being part of the problem. You know, when you and I were first starting to talk about this back in the 90s, the internet had not become what it was going to become. But now there are all kinds of components out there.
Years ago, in those days when you're talking, the media didn't tell you take four or pick five or get seven or take this team or bet the underdog. Today it's so prevalent. Every media guy in the sports field is telling you about who to pick and who to take and what to have. I remember a couple of years ago, a major guy in the sports field or in the media field, in the middle of the game, all of a sudden, hollered, they covered the spread. I mean, that was unheard of in those days.
And I think you're talking about Brent Musburger, who did that and who just left ESPN because he's doing a gambling site out of Las Vegas.
Boy, if that don't tell you something, I don't know what does.
How can people recognize the signs of a problem gambler in their family or with a loved one or a close friend?
There's no track marks. There's no dilated pupils. There's no smell, unlike you have with alcohol or drug addiction. So gamblers can come home and they look okay. They go to work with a suit and tie. The ladies go to work with a nice dress on. And it's almost an invisible disease, and that's the real problem here. I remember getting a call one time from a lady that said, my husband was arrested for an embezzlement of $600,000. She says that they were married 30 years and she never knew that he gambled. And it can be that invisible.
It's not just a problem for men, but plenty of women, too.
Absolutely. You know, 20 years ago when we spoke, the number of women seeking help was probably about 5%. Today it's up about 40 or 50%. It's really been an explosion since the casinos opened all over the country and the slot machines came into evolution. The fact is that these ladies, most of them, are slot players.
I want to get to the NFL and to the professional sports leagues in general because, you know, are they part of the problem or are they part of the solution?
They're part of the problem. You know, you look at the NFL, They give out an injury list every week. Why would they want to give out an injury list except it's for the people that gamble on the games that want to know who's hurt and who's not going to play? So they're part of the problem, and they don't do anything to divert away from the gambling. If you took the gambling away from the NFL games, you got American soccer.
Yeah, but Arnie, Major League Baseball and the other sports all have disabled lists that are very, very public. So how is that NFL different from baseball, hockey, basketball, whatever?
Well, people bet on all the other sports, but the biggest sport that they're betting on all year is football. I once had a bookmaker come to me and tell me way back in the 60s when I was into my gambling, and the bookmaker said to me, Arnie, I have 100 customers throughout the year. I have 300 customers when it comes to NFL games.
That's Arnie Wexler, a recovering gambler for almost 50 years. He now helps recovering gamblers or those who want to quit gambling and their families through his website, aswexler.com. Gamblers Anonymous, their website also has helplines for every state if you need help or if you know someone who needs help. For the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Peter King.
Janine Poggi is a reporter with Ad Age. She was on CBS this morning to talk about the commercials you'll see on the Super Bowl, especially those ads featuring celebrities.
Celebrities are a mainstay of Super Bowl commercials. They are a driving force of the excitement. And as, you know, we see more marketers pre-release these ads, they are using celebrities to get the word out and to talk to their fans.
We've got Melissa. Melissa McCarthy in the Kia ad.
Yes.
She's a celebrity.
The Ice Cats are in trouble. Now the rhinos need saving.
Rhinos!
It's hard to be an eco-warrior, but it's easy to drive like one.
Does star power help in the ads, do you think?
It definitely does. When you have a name like Melissa McCarthy, everyone knows, it certainly helps generate buzz and excitement, the same way that a big movie that has a big celebrity in it would.
But do you remember Melissa or do you remember the product?
That's a great question, and it really depends on how well the creative is done and how much the brand is able to tie it back into what they're known for. So, yes, it does run the risk of it just being a show for the celebrity. Yeah.
The price of a 30-second ad on this year's Super Bowl, $5 million. That's up from $2.5 million back in 2010. Look for the Budweiser ad, which is causing some controversy. It tells the story of one of the founders, an immigrant who ran into trouble when he came to America, but persevered to create a beer empire. Some see a political message, but the company says no, it's just a great story that should help sell some beer.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me.
Lady Gaga says she wants her Super Bowl halftime show to create a moment that everyone watching will never forget, and if anyone can do that, it's probably her. She says she plans to celebrate inclusion and the spirit of equality. Whether this becomes a political statement, we'll have to wait and see. Gaga says there will be no return of her infamous meat dress from a few years back, nor will there be a wardrobe malfunction like Janet Jackson had in the 2004 Super Bowl. She says everything will be, in her words, nice and tight. Look for a special appearance by her pal, Tony Bennett. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
It's the new year, which means a fresh start for your business. And a great year starts with making great hires. But posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your jobs on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter, you can jumpstart your hiring in 2017. Post your jobs to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Sam Litzinger. It's no secret there are a lot of tensions in the United States right now, political, cultural, racial, religious. But these differences are overcome every day. Case in point, a mosque that burned up in Victoria, Texas. Now, you might not immediately think of Victoria, Texas as a center of Muslim culture, but that's not really the point. The point is just about everyone who lives there saw some other human beings who needed some help, and CBS News correspondent David Begno says they decided to give it to them.
This charred shell is all that's left of the Victoria Islamic Center.
And this is the ladies' room here.
Dr. Shahid Hashmi is the center's president. He watched for 3 hours as firefighters lost the fight.
It's a destroyed place, but a sacred place.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
But the response has been uplifting. All faiths from the community have rallied in support of the center and turned out for a unity prayer service the day after the fire. Around the world,
from Africa, from Zimbabwe, from United Kingdom,
thousands of people have donated through an online GoFundMe page.
You've gotten nearly $1 million.
We've gotten nearly
from almost 20,000 people.
Correct.
In 3 days.
Exactly. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable and so uplifting. I cannot thank enough. I cannot thank God enough. I cannot thank the supporting people enough.
Dr. Gary Branfman, a local Jewish community leader, was one of the first to offer to help.
What the spark really did was, instead of dividing us, it actually united us.
What's the lesson we all should learn?
It just gives you a confirmation of the faith in humanity. No matter which faith you belong to, which color you belong to, which country you belong to, it doesn't matter. It's always good. And good always wins.
Today we saw a couple standing on the side of the mosque. The man was actually holding an envelope. Turns out they're from Wisconsin. We're vacationing here in South Texas, heard about the fire, and on their way home to the Midwest, went out of their way to drive by and hand deliver a donation.
CBS News correspondent Tony DeCoppel has the story of a woman who lost a leg in the Boston Marathon bombing and now, after some tough physical therapy, has found the love of her life who saved hers and now keeps her running strong.
After fighting the climb, nearly 1,600 steps, Roseanne Sedoya crossed the finish line at the top of one of the tallest buildings in the world. Perhaps more challenging because Roseanne is an amputee, but she wasn't running alone. Her fiancé, Mike Materia, a firefighter, was behind her the whole way, wearing pounds of gear. It's a relationship of devotion.
Picked her right up off the street.
That began in a moment of tragedy. In April 2013, Roseanne was watching the Boston Marathon near the finish line.
I heard and felt the first one go off, and then at the second location, the backpack was pretty much behind me.
The second explosion destroyed her right leg, and three strangers ran to help her, one tying a tourniquet. But it was Mike who held her hand all the way to the hospital.
I was sedated until Tuesday evening. And so when I came out, my mom's like, who's that firefighter? I'm like, are you kidding me right now? I was just blown up.
To try to go back to everyday life is pretty tough, you know. So I was lucky that even Roseanne's friends and family, it helped me to help them, you know. So,
and help Roseanne through a long and painful rehabilitation.
There's some days where I wake up and I'm like, this sucks. Point blank. I don't want to do this anymore. But then there's always the next day, and, you know, life changes, and what can you do?
Mike proposed to Roseanne in December, and they plan to marry in the fall.
Bring it down.
The couple spent months training for the climb up the Empire State Building, and it was Mike who kept Roseanne moving forward.
If you could go back and do it over, would you miss the marathon that day?
So much good has come out of it. Obviously, Mike and our engagement and the love that we have for each other, I survived. So I'm very thankful for that. There are people that didn't. Honestly, I would probably go again.
Tony DeCoppel, New York.
If you're anything like me, you probably abandoned all your New Year's resolutions by now, including the I've got to get in better shape one. But maybe it's time to revisit that particular resolution. And if you need a little inspiration, and who doesn't, CBS News correspondent Omar Villafranca introduces us to a woman who can do just that.
6 days a week at 5:30 in the morning, you'll find 75-year-old Diet Sauer swimming a total of 120 laps at this Houston Aquatic Center. Sauer admits when she first started swimming, she felt like a fish out of water.
It was horrible. I quit in the middle of the first lap.
You couldn't even make a lap in the pool?
No, and I was swimming with my head out of the water so my hair wouldn't get wet.
In her 40s, Sauer was considered obese, tipping the scale at 250 pounds. She was ashamed when she couldn't fit into a small boat on a family vacation and decided to do something about her health. Sauer changed her diet and started exercising. It wasn't easy, but she managed to lose 100 pounds in less than a year.
You know what was funny? I had been so large that I forgot and didn't believe that you could actually get a waist back.
She's competed in the last 8 National Senior Games, an Olympic-style competition for more than 10,000 seniors. She was 58 when she found her passion.
I can't believe that I could be an athlete and win a medal at 58 years old.
This is Senior Games.
Now at 75, Sauer has won more than 50 medals.
Michael Phelps? Never heard of him.
Oh, Michael, what does he have, 12 or something, you know?
23 times 9.
She's also active outside of the pool. Twice a week, she tutors kids at a local church. And 3 days a week, she teaches English and history to her grandchildren via Skype. Sauer's personal trainer, Julie Green, is amazed at how Sauer has defined living stronger.
I'm so in awe of that motivation that came from within her.
Sauer is now training for the National Senior Games this June in Birmingham, Alabama.
How long do you think you'll keep swimming?
It'll have to be taken away from me. I'm not going to give it up.
And not giving up means going for gold, even in her golden years. Omar Villafranca, CBS News, Houston.
Here's another woman who's inspiring a lot of people. Pop superstar Beyonce says she's pregnant with twins, and she's out with the photos to prove it. She's posted them on her website. Fans have been checking them out as fast as they can click. She's also broken the record for the most liked Instagram post ever. Then there's this guy.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam.
Nobel laureate Bob Dylan. You think he's getting tired of his friends calling him that? Anyway, Dylan's returning to the classics for his new album titled Triplicate, coming out next month. 3 discs, and it's the 3rd successive album consisting of tunes performed by Frank Sinatra, who is no big fan of this rock and roll stuff, but might well be flattered that one of its champions is covering songs he made famous. We appreciate you listening to the Weekend Roundup. Please keep in mind you can do a search online to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. I'm Sam Litzinger, CBS News.